Good morning, 8 minutes. No, try it again. 11 minutes after 8 o'clock. Other way around. I transposed. 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome to this Thursday morning special edition of the Roundtable as we bring you up to the 9 o'clock hour when we will begin day three of coverage of the hearings of Brett Kavanaugh. We will be talking about that this morning with our panel. Among many other issues, there is other stuff to talk about, obviously. Let me introduce the panel, and we will get started right away, not to waste a moment of our precious time this morning. Kaylin Brown is with us, professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. Hello.
Hello, hello.
It is wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us. Ira Fussfeld also joins us. He is publisher emeritus at the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York. How are you, sir?
I'm well. I'm just a little disappointed. I was promised that if I come up an hour early, we get the full breakfast buffet, but I might have missed that. Perhaps the next time. No, Alan, am I?
No, I guess
not in the budget.
There's some. I did notice there's a very big zucchini out front.
There's a piece of fruit in the lobby, and I asked your Patrick Garrick what it is, and neither of us were sure.
No,
it might be a tomato, but appetizing.
I think it is. It could be meat, could be cake.
Yeah,
it
was, so I passed.
You don't know. And Alan Chartok here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. A piece of personal leverage, if I may, and that is, I just wanted to thank my wife for sticking with me for 48 years. It's our anniversary today.
48 years.
That's a long time.
48 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Happy anniversary.
She stuck with you for 48 years.
Everybody
out of
has
how many?
The same reaction Kaylin has, which is God bless her.
I just remember back to the roast where she was just saying, it's not easy being married, Alan.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
And then she had the whole audience repeeting it.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago.
That was the one at the armory.
Yeah,
well, that's not all she said, but we need not repeat that right
no,
now.
No, we can't. We no. can repeat that.
We would lose
actually.
Our license.
No, at 9 o'clock, we could say it. At 8 o'clock, we can say it. It's family hour. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. We are going to talk about the hearings, of course, but hearing schmearings. We have an op-ed to talk about. This is something. I don't know whether maybe I'm just making too much out of this, but I cannot get enough of this story. I find it fascinating in so many different ways. I don't know if it means anything, but I find it to be fascinating. The New York Times publishes, in and of itself, just a rarity, not something they have done before, but an extreme rarity where they have printed, and we'll talk about this, printed an anonymous op-ed piece, an anonymous editorial. Now, the title, I Am Part of the Resistance Inside the Trump Administration. The wording from the Times is, the Times today is taking the rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We have done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration, whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. We invite you to submit a question about the essay or our vetting process here. I would like to get into the journalistic part of this second. I would like to talk about the editorial first. And the editorial itself is quite damning. From this insider, the senior official, where lines like, the dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know, I am one of them. To be clear, ours is not the popular resistance of the left. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. There is that. There is also the much larger looming question, who wrote it? Vegas opened odds this morning, from what I hear.
They did.
So, there are many suspects. We can talk about that as well. I was thinking it was Joe Klein.
I
referenced him in my commentary.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Lying Joe Klein.
Joe Klein. This is primary colors. But this is a person in the administration who is still there, who still has a job. Okay, but let's talk about this incredible of what it would take, and is this brave? Or is this cowardly by being anonymous, and is this something that they should come forward and give their name, or is this the first step of trying to expose something that we, the American people, probably many of us are already aware of, but is another indication that there are serious problems within the White House?
You know, I keep going back to the point at which everybody says we should have stopped Hitler earlier. It was, you know, we could have done it, but we could have stopped him earlier. So the question to me is, how urgent is, and what are we learning about Donald Trump that means this kind of thing, which I don't like, by the way, is justified? It's justifiable only if, in fact, it's the way in which the Times is doing their part in putting a stop to what is clearly looking more and more like the actions of a madman. I don't know how else to put it. So the justification for doing it is that. On the other hand, wouldn't it be great if somebody had a profile and courage and the ability to stand up and say, you know, I'm going to get fired anyway. Sooner or later, this guy turns on everybody, and I'm going to do the right thing. I am going to quit, and on the way out, I'm going to tell what I've done here and why it's so dangerous.
And to that point, Alan, and I thought about this so much last night, which is that the writer of this essay, male or female, the writer of this essay seems to be saying that, well, okay, this is bad. This is very bad, although you should, American people, take heed in the fact that there are men and women within the White House who are working diligently to make sure that something horrible doesn't go wrong. The problem I have with that is that people are leaving this White House every 5 seconds. And I don't know, so at what point do you replace them with other people who are in the inside resistance? Or are you, as the Washington Post pointed out yesterday, this just makes a paranoid man even more paranoid to the only people that he's trusting are his children.
And his base. Don't forget about the potential here that something like this proves that the, quote, failing New York Times is after me and they're part of the dark state and they're gonna get me. And the reason that there's a memo that has gone out, I mean, it's never been put on paper, but everybody knows it's there, which is you're not allowed to mention the I word, you're not allowed to mention impeachment, because that will rile the base. And if the base...
The memo riled, where?
What'd you say?
A memo put out where?
I'm so sorry. I thought I made that clear. It's not on paper.
It's not on paper.
But the quote memo has gone out. Nobody is going to mention impeachment because it's going to rile the base. And that's the last thing you'll want to do. And this could potentially be used once again to rile the base.
Well, listen, if let's put aside, as Joe suggests, the New York Times decision to publish an anonymous piece such as this. So I'm willing to accept the New York Times as an arbiter that they've got somebody pretty high up there. They wouldn't have done it because they know the consequences. But putting that aside, I think that what this column reveals is pretty much what the Woodward book purports about the White House, about the Michael Wolff book purports to report about the White House, Amorosa's book. In short, nothing really new. And so I think the importance...
Nothing new, but coming from...
Yes, but then it's the importance of knowing who it is. Really, you know, Trump has already laid the groundwork, as we've said many times, that his base is not going to believe the failing New York Times or other mainstream media. And the only way I think that they will believe it is if they know who this is coming from and what then they can interpret for themselves the motivation. So I think it's a problem for the writer that he or she has not revealed himself, bearing in mind the likely consequences had they revealed themselves.
I think there's value, Ira, in what you said, bringing up the observation about the Bob Woodward book, the new book called Fear. I think the title of that book is the most one of the most brilliant titles of a book written about this presidency. It is, because everything in that presidency is operating out of fear. The writer of the New York Times op-ed piece clearly is withholding his or her name because of fear. But what we're learning, and while I have not yet read the Woodward book, you can imagine that it is a motivator, and fear is motivating all these individuals. Fear is the most problematic motivator for people, and it doesn't result in positive results. So I have a problem, too, with no name on this story. I don't think that there's anything very new in the story, and Eric Wemple points that out in his criticism of the story and the criticism of the New York Times when he writes to the Washington Post about that. He's, you know, he's a columnist for the Washington Post.
He's wrong.
He said, what is new about this?
He's wrong, because there's a difference between what comes from within and what comes from without.
But Woodward has all that in his book. I mean, from excerpts we've seen, he's talked to people inside.
Yeah, well, that's true, but that's also without. I mean, here's another, yet another nail in this guy's political coffin.
But wouldn't it be more of a nail if you said, okay, well, first of all.
By the way, somebody wrote me not that long ago, I'm sorry, Joe, and said, you should never tell anybody that they're wrong.
I think that was me.
Yeah.
you may say they disagreed, but they're not necessarily
I thought
wrong.
The response from Senator Bob Corker, the retiring Republican from Tennessee, who said, this is what all of us have understood to be the situation from day one. I understand this is the case, and that's why I think all of us encourage the good people around the presidents to stay. I thank General Mattis whenever I see him. Okay, so that is that. I think that is.
But they're enablers, Joe. That's the thing.
Oh,
they
that well, that's
enablers.
The thing. So, but what? That's but. Don't you then have to? It does this. So let's say somebody came forward and said, I am an administration official, and this is the editorial that I wrote.
We're going to find out, by the way.
We are absolutely going to find out. I agree.
Okay,
I think this person wants a book deal and a movie, and that's why they wrote it.
Oh, I don't think so. I think they're – I don't know. It seems to me that it comes from a place of
– It's you know, Joe.
You know, that they're trying to do the right thing.
You know, Joe, you don't know. I don't know. We don't know. But I can tell you this much. I had an experience like this. It's not exactly the same. Ira, you probably remember this. But they put a editorial on the editorial page of the New York Times, and it was a criticism of Mario Cuomo back in the Reagan days. And this was an anonymous article by somebody they identified only as Jericho. And they wrote at the bottom of the column, now remember, I was interviewing Mario every week and the rest of it, that Jericho is an academic who watches politics in Albany. My phone begins to ring. There's the governor. There's everybody else. I walk in the program the next day, and the governor says, welcome, Jericho, you know, as if I would write a negative article about the guy who I admire so much. And I said, I'm not Jericho. And he said, I know that. He was just giving me the business. And the Times had done immense damage, personal damage to me, because basically they gave a hint by not but and why would they do that? Why would
now,
they
now was it an editorial or was it an op-ed?
Op-ed.
Okay, because it's a I believe most of our listeners know the difference, but those terms are now being in the last 12 hours been interchanged. And
incorrectly, don't you
incorrectly.
Think?
Incorrectly. Well, Trump himself in that little gathering with the sheriffs yesterday made reference to the New York Times published an editorial. It is not an editorial. It is an op-ed, which means opposite editorial page, and it is the opinion of the writer, not necessarily the opinion of the newspaper, which offers its own opinions under the title editorial. So there is a distinction between editorial and op-ed. This is an op-ed.
It's a very good point, Ira.
When do we get to talk about the anonymous part?
All right, who is it? Who is it?
Oh, I don't know who it is, but I want to talk about the journalism question. What's New York Times doing publishing anonymous information? That's
so
not responsible.
Okay, so if you
I'm sorry, Joe, but I tried to answer that in my original soliloquy. which it does seem like, but which is that this is such a dangerous time in America that they thought, and they knew they were in trouble here. That's why they invited people to write in. There must have been a hell of a discussion on their editorial board, if you think about it. But when I said people could have stopped Hitler if they did it early enough, and this guy is showing some real Hitlerian tendencies.
But that doesn't mean that what the New York Times did was right.
So if you are, as publisher of the Daily Freeman, if you were working at on the editorial board of the Times Union, would you, I said that to Ira and then to Kalen, would you want it published?
I would first need to know who wrote it.
Well, they know who wrote it.
And that's why I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. But in general, I would not run an op-ed column that was from an anonymous writer. And I think it does a disservice to the readers because you need to know the perspective of the person. And we know the perspective in the sense that they say he is a senior administration official. That's a pretty broad term. I mean, is it a cabinet member? Is it one of the secretaries? Is it a speechwriter?
Is it deputy secretary of the civil service
now,
or whatever?
My opinion is that the New York Times, knowing who it is, would not have run it were they not sure that it was somebody pretty high up. But with that knowledge in mind, I'm willing to say, okay, but to Joe's question, knowing what we know, which is not who the writer is, I wouldn't publish it.
But on last week's Media Project, we discussed this whole concept of how journalists will do self-seeking things that they think are important to them. Think about this for a second. So they say to somebody, okay, it's an anonymous source. You see it all the time.
Different.
No, it's everything, Ira.
Yeah.
Everything is different.
Well, yes.
Everything is always different. Nevertheless, then this person says, and then they go to, and it has happened. I'm not saying it happened at the Times. They go to somebody, and the person who actually is this source.
Oh.
And then they say to that person, what do you know about this? And the person said, I know nothing. I had nothing to do with this. And that's a lie.
Yeah, we all agreed for somebody who was the anonymous source to then be named as having no comment is bad ethically. I think I heard the name that was tossed around the most frequently in the last 12 to 18 hours was Deep Throat, and that the New York Times now has its own version of the Woodward Bernstein Washington Deep Throat. The distinction in my mind is Deep Throat was somebody who pointed Woodward and Bernstein in the direction of the story, and then the Woodward and Bernstein got the story from other sources,
yes,
as opposed to an anonymous column writer.
I want Kalen to weigh in, and then let's talk about then what that sets up to what we do next with this information, what the Times would do, because they have said that they are not necessarily done with this. Go ahead.
I think the inner workings of a media organization like the New York Times gets lost on the general public because they're busy living their lives. They don't have time to know that the use of an anonymous source in a story should be rare. The use of an anonymous writer in an opinion piece like this, an op-ed piece, should be extraordinarily rare. The Times did make the point of saying that this was a rare occurrence. And again, yes, they did invite the public to weigh in on it. And I'm certain the Times thinks it was making the best decision. And I am generally a daily reader of the Times and have been for as long as I can remember. But I just think
daily, not barely.
Daily, yes. Actually, multiple times a day, Alan. I have the same affliction you have where you keep refreshing. But I think that it's important to remember that when you use anonymity in publication, you are putting into question the credibility of the content, and the credibility is more important than ever at this point in history.
But aren't you also putting the credibility of the newspaper online?
Absolutely, and that was a decision they made.
And if we are going to, and I know you can take this in many different directions, but can you possibly extrapolate from that? I know you can do the opposite, but could you extrapolate from that? Then they knew they had a hell of a story, and it was worth taking that chance of their credibility.
I'm not convinced it's a hell of a story. Once again, what is written by this individual is not really anything new.
Yes, but an insider. I keep trying to say that.
It's
but
like
insiders have been leaking since January of 2017. They've been leaking. It's a sieve. It's been leaking since the day the office was assumed.
I think leaking is different. Why? Try CNN, try MSNBC, try us, you name it, try, and even sometimes NPR.
NPR, yeah. Did you say something about NPR?
No, I was taking a shot there. Okay. You know, who don't like to come out and, you know, do the courageous things all the time. So even they, everybody's talking about this. It has a tremendous import. Think about that. I mean, you know, you may be right, but think about everybody talking about this and what weight it has in terms of our discourse.
All right.
I got lost. Did you say I might be right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's pause. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. We have letters, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Kavanaugh hearings, and then we'll hear more of the Kavanaugh hearings, all of that coming up after this short break.
Support comes from the Mahawi in Great Barrington, presenting Lewis Black with the Jokes on Us tour September 23rd, plus Chris Bode on October 6th, and Postmodern Jukebox on November 2nd. Mahawi.org. Emma Willard School, Troy, New York, offering high school boarding and day programs for girls with a focus on leadership opportunities and personalized learning. EmmaWillard.org. California Closets, Route 7, Latham, working with local businesses to custom design and build offices, workspaces, storage cabinets, employee lounges, and more, californiaclosets.com. Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute Museum of Art in Utica, presenting the exhibit Kimono, 48 Handcrafted Illustrative Kimono, mwpai.org. The Music Studio, comprehensive piano-based music classes for Capital Region students ages 3 and up. Open houses September 6th through 10th, themusicstudio.com. And from New World Bistro Bar, Albany, featuring executive chef Rick Orlando's Global Comfort Food, serving local and sustainable cuisine. Dinner 7 nights a week and Sunday brunch, newworldbistrobar.com.
That's Pa Co. Join us for an evening with Ghanaian drummer and composer Pa Co and his Afrofusion Orchestra on Thursday, September 6th at 8 p.m. at the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. For tickets and information, visit thelinda.org.
Support comes from Argyle Brewing Company of Greenwich and Cambridge, pouring on September 7th and 8th at the Eastbound Throwdown Festival in Salem. Tickets available online at eastboundthrowdown.com. Coldman Hartman Architects, serving clients throughout New England and New York, with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Designed for the next 100 years, CNHArchitects.com. Congregation Emmanuel Kingston, all are welcome to high holiday services beginning Sunday evening, September 9th at 7:30. Congregation Emmanuel in Kingston for more information, CEHV.org. Shakespeare and Company, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Taylor Mack's Dark Comedy Here, September 13th through October 7th. Shakespeare.org. And from Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer, serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs, SteveLewisSubaru.com.
All right, so the other big question is, who is it? Who wrote it? And there's speculation, and I agree. I think it was Alan who said this. You know, we'll know. We'll find out, right? Yeah. I mean, you're going to find out. And the question is, how long will it take us to find out? The most convincing I've been watching, I've been watching everything I can on this.
In Deep Throat's case, took 50 years.
Somewhere in 2 or 3 hours of sleep because I was just fascinated by the story. But the most Lawrence O'Donnell yesterday on last night on MSNBC made the case for Dan Coats. And if you watch that or read the transcript, I think makes a convincing argument. He is on most of the lists as a possibility. And then as I'm thinking about this, I wonder, well, does it matter? But
of course it matters. Don't you think it matters?
I think the credibility of the author will be valuable when the name is learned. I think people will either take it more seriously or dismiss it out of hand and say, oh, well, it was that person, so who cares? Or they're going to say, oh, that's interesting, and that makes sense that that individual was the person.
Well, but I'm sorry, Ira, but none of this goes to motive. In other words, the assumption is that the motive is pure, that they're doing it, but then who knows whether this is some kind of a ploy on the part of the Trump people? You know, even when you go back to Deep Throat, right? And you say, all right, so this guy was the deputy director of the FBI during that time. What was the FBI's interest in Nixon, right? That made this. There are a lot of. You all understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You just don't know what the motive is.
I'm stuck on the pure observation. Is the motive pure? And we'll have to wait and see on that, but we haven't seen a lot of purity yet coming out of this administration.
Well,
so
it depends
on
pure what.
I mean, if you take the writer at their word, the two things that they're trying to get across, one is that there are people within the White House who are trying to keep this president on course and are doing their job to try to keep democracy alive as much as possible, also while giving the president a shot that he is unfit, in the writer's eye, unfit for the presidency.
Now, you guys will remember that yesterday, before anything came out in any of these copycat newspapers, I was reading to you the 25th Amendment. Remember
right.
that?
Right, yes.
Okay, now the 25th Amendment means that the cabinet and the other people can throw him in. They can say, okay, he's not competent to do this and the rest. So the argument about keeping people in place is that the people who are closest to this and who know what his perfidy is will follow through basically recommend. But we all agree the 25th Amendment is not going to get invoked here, don't we? Unless something
else. I don't. There are too many twists and turns to predict that. I just think that imperative that we find out who this person is, that he is not a wacko.
Or she.
That he or she has the respect of the country and, most importantly, is the Congress. Once again, we're at that juncture where how can McConnell and Ryan and the senior people in the Republican Party stay silent
Joe, I'm sorry. I was just thinking something. Sarah hands me the newest batch of letters, and the very thing that I was thinking comes up, and it's from our friend Kevin. And he says,
where are the macaroons?
He says, he says, it's Kellyanne Conway. Now, there's a good. There is a very good possibility. We know she's married to somebody who hates his guts. You know, we know that she's torn in different directions. So
she's on the list. Melania is on the list.
Oh, come on.
I'm just saying that.
Well, I just think that this is a waste of time because it's just
We don't know.
I
don't think it's a waste of time. I think it's great.
Well, it's fun. It's great speculation, but it's a waste of time.
But we want to move the conversation forward so that we
And I want to hit just one minor, one minor journalistic point. You made reference to the fact that the Times knew it had a great story, and that's why they would want to run something like this. It's important that people understand that the opinion section, the op-ed page of the New York Times, has nothing to do with the newsroom. The doubters will say that's a lot of BS, but in fact, that's the case. it's unlikely.
We disagree. That, I want to register and say,
okay, I know you
that.
Do. It's unlikely that Dean Baquet, the editor of the New York Times, knew of the existence of this piece until it was printed. And so the motivation would not be because it is a great story, but because it is an interesting, provocative, and important piece of opinion that belongs on the op-ed page.
Now, Ira, you know how I love you and yes. respect you. There's almost okay. nobody in the world who...
We only have 20 minutes, so we'll read the letters.
Okay, I will. But I want you to know, in many newspapers, the editor of the paper sits
small
on,
ones. Not
well,
talking about
Times
the New York
Union,
Times,
for example, sits on the editorial board, and therefore, if you were doing an organization chart, that editorial person is also. The editor is also assigning stories.
But it's not the case at the New York Times. Thus, the fact that it was a great story would not be a motivation.
Okay, but
it's
then...
It's not a story.
It's not a story.
It's an op-ed
right.
piece. That's
yes,
the bottom line.
A
story is produced by reporters with multiple facts and fact-checking and verification and justification for the story. All of the points that go into making an actual piece of journalism. This is not a piece of journalism. This is an opinion piece
that
any human
journalism.
On earth can write it.
Excuse me. That is journalism. Journalism is anybody who writes in a journal. I have been through this with you people again
but
and again.
There are different kinds of journalism. This is opinion journalism, and it has nothing to do with the news side of the paper.
All right, letters. We have 19 minutes.
Okay, here we go. It's Kellyanne Conway, says Kevin. The taped conversation between Trump and Woodward where she pipes up and is caught as one of the players who kept Trump out of the book makes her look really bad, starts her walk to the door. And then Vincent says, the best case scenario regarding the op-ed is that it is a time when our country needs the best and most proactive leadership. We have an entire administration on damage control. And Russ says, the disgruntled Pence supporter who wrote the New York Times op-ed can only have intended that Trump should make every effort to impose executive power without any intervention from his own staff. This is a dangerous game. And let me just say, one of the people who's on the list is, of course, Pence.
Pence, a speechwriter, I've heard.
Yeah. Well, I've heard Pence and the speechwriter, yeah.
Okay. And Barry says, the New York Times very carefully articulated why they published this, in quotes, capital letters, anonymous op-ed piece. They have done this a very limited number of times before. Its rarity speaks to the weight of the decision to publish. They published this too. Principles are important. It is also important to know when to go outside the principles. And Daisy, our friend Daisy, said, what I found really scary. I'm glad they published that piece. It was right given what a dangerous time we're in. Daisy and I, as usual, on the same page. I truly believe this is finally the beginning of the end of his presidency. And yes, I get journalistic standards, but come on. These times call for courage. What I found even scarier is his rant yesterday and those law enforcement officers cheering for him. Thanks, Daisy.
Courage and journalistic standards are not mutually exclusive.
And courage on the part of the writer would have meant we would see the person's name. That's the bottom line.
I hear you. And Robert says, one value of the New York Times anonymous op-ed is its brevity. Regular people can read it in 5 minutes and make up their own mind. And that's from Bob. Oh,
too bad he didn't go to USA Today with it.
Oh, boy.
And Marty says,
a shot. Good.
And Marty says, dear panel, assuming that Kavanaugh is confirmed, if the Congress goes Democratic in November, and if Trump is removed from office because of proof of colluding with the Russians, then would it be possible for the Congress to introduce procedures to invalidate both Supreme Court judges Gorsuch and Kavanaugh? The answer to that is no, absolutely not. Okay, and then here's one from Naomi who says, happy anniversary. Isn't that nice? All right. And New York Times says, okay, from Tom, you guys are the best. Wouldn't it be interesting if the anonymous source came out to be all of his staff? Do you all remember Hercule Poirot?
Easy
for you to say.
One of the
great mystery writers of
Agatha
all time.
Christie. Well, Agatha Christie, one of the protagonists.
Yes,
with Miss Jane Marple.
And you will remember on the train, when
on the Orient Express,
when it turned out they all did it together. They all killed the guy together.
Well, there are a couple of times in there that
we're not talking.
They
about
say
killing,
the we.
Right?
No. Well, no.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so that came from Tom, and that's what I was thinking. Panel, my impressions of this editorial. A lodestar.
Op-ed.
What?
Op-ed, not an editorial.
An editorial. It's not an editorial.
You read it right,
no,
but
no,
it's not an editorial.
Yeah, it's not an editorial, yeah. And I agree with that. But, you know, so much you can do. Okay, panel, my impressions of this op-ed. All right, here we go. A lodestar is a red herring. Can somebody tell us what it is meant by lodestar?
Lodestar.
I have to go back and read it again. I think it means the guiding light. But the point was, it's an unusual word, and they believe they can trace the writer to that word.
Yeah, who has used it before.
Yes.
That's right. B, this was written more as a message to our foreign adversaries, not the American people. And three, things are bad, and that's from our friend Jim in Montgomery. And Sharon says... What?
No, I think that's just back to Caitlin's point, too, though, that... And even Corker's point. Yeah, we knew things were bad.
Yeah. So why did you let it go on all this time?
Right.
Sharon says an anonymous letter, editorial, no.
Op-ed.
Morning panel. You mentioned Trump now perhaps being paranoid and now only trusting his children. What if it was one of his children wrote that letter?
As I said, that is
that
on
would be
that
sweet
is
revenge.
They're taking odds on that in Vegas right now.
Nothing would surprise me at this point. And that's Sharon in Haydenville. And Kathy says, as I see it, the question is not brave or cowardly. The question is why. This must be some part of strategy. The writer agrees with Trump's policies. Are they trying to get Trump to fire Pence? I don't know, but there is more to this. Oh, by the way, OBTW, oh, by the way, thank you for the early start. We need your wisdom at times like these. That's very nice. Thank you. We've been getting several letters thanking us for making
this. Well, you know what we say on the Media Project, that the show ought to be an hour? Then the show ought to be 5 hours.
Yeah, for sure.
Joe would appreciate that.
And Mary says, Deep Throat 2. How is this anonymous official any different than Deep Throat of the Nixon era? The person did the American people a tremendous service, and his anonymity at the time enabled him to continue that service, and that's from Mary. We did talk about
that. Yes, I think I tried to address that.
Yeah, right. And Oliver says, if only 10% of the dealings need to be disclosed, I can make Al Capone look like an angel. Capone was a charitable man who invested heavily in his community. However, and so did Don John Gotti, by the way. He gave a lot of money out to the community.
You're talking about the Kavanaugh hearings now.
However, if there's only one day of the year when he paid to have someone murdered, that's the day I would want to know about. And that's from Oliver. And then from Suzanne, the safety of the individual who wrote the piece published in the Times is paramount. In the current far-right climate, his or her safety would be incredibly at risk, period. I can't imagine anyone right now would be more of a target. Now, that's an interesting question, about personal safety. We do know how the Russians would have handled it.
That's exactly what I was thinking, that since Trump so... admires Mr. Putin, that perhaps he would exercise the same sort of get back.
And remember that Trump said that he could kill somebody. Am I wrong about this on Fifth Avenue?
Well, shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. I don't know if he said kill, but...
Yeah,
yeah.
You're quite
he
right.
Missed.
Yeah, depending.
He missed.
Who said that?
All right. Wait, we have to go to a break. Okay.
One more. Okay. Peter says, if the author of the op-ed piece were to come forward, it would make no difference to its credibility with the base. That person would be seen as a traitor no matter who it is. Also, if this person would come forward, he or she could no longer provide the safeguards that he or she says are so important.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will briefly talk about the Kavanaugh hearings. And then we'll actually go to the Kavanaugh hearings right after this short break.
Support comes from Woodstock School of Art, offering 8x10 works by over 50 contemporary artists from the Woodstock Monoprint Invitational Exhibition, September 8th through October 6th. Benefit opening reception, September 8th at 3 p.m. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. Capital Smiles, Drs. Aaron Page and Shiloh Lieberman, providing dental health services in the Capital District, including dental implants, TMJ Botox therapy, oral surgery, orthodontics, and more, capitalsmiles.com. The Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley, since 1963. An independent bookshop offering books and gifts for all ages, author events, first editions club, Odyssey Kids program, and more, odysseybks.com. Bard Fisher Center, presenting The Stage at Montgomery Place, a series of outdoor events open to the public featuring film, music, dance, September 15th through 29th, fishercenter.bard.edu. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom display solutions, interactive exhibits, and rental gallery walls for special events, museum installations, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. And from Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Del Mar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, binoculars, and nature gifts, announcing Bird Feeder Cleaning Day, September 22nd. WildBirdJunction.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our special edition of the program. We are airing from 8 to 9. Here's the good news. We'll be back to normal tomorrow. So
we will?
Yes, 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 yes. So we will be back. There will be the closing arguments tomorrow and some repetition, and they're not offering coverage, so we're not going to take it.
So what time will we be?
9 to 10:30. We're back to our good old-fashioned schedule.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're very excited about that. But we're glad we could be with you this morning. Let us talk about the Kavanaugh hearings briefly before we go over to NPR coverage of them, day three.
And you want to see Joe get up and strangle me? Try this one. No, Joe, why don't we go from 8 to 10:30?
Yeah, you're right. not only will I, but your
audience.
your other panelists, too, that suddenly have a 2.5-hour commitment.
I was just kidding.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a 2.5-hour movie and walked out of it saying, boy, I wish that were longer? So let us look at the Kavanaugh hearings. Two things that struck me yesterday. One, I thought he seemed more combative than I would have expected. I thought there were moments where they seemed to, there were a couple of senators that seemed to get under his skin. I thought what I had read early going into this is that he was unflappable, and obviously that was what many of the senators were trying to do. Not to mention there does have to be the, I think, in fairness, you have to say that the regular, if not every moment, the interruptions in the gallery have to be a little fraying to the nerves as well. But that was one thing that surprised me. And again, this refusal, and I know this is a big thing on the left of people saying this, but it surprised me, of a refusal to get into any kind of hypothetical with senators on, okay, asking the question that Alan asked just a few moments ago. All right, if this case of this president goes before a Supreme Court that you're on, how do you buy that? And refusing to go into a hypothetical seems to me, I guess it makes sense, but not really overly comforting.
Let's remember what this is all about.
Yes, sir.
He wants to be confirmed. That's what this. That's what the objective
is. That's the job.
He doesn't want to have a fight with anybody that he can possibly do. You know, I would take. You're the boss of this place, but I would. This panel. But you are.
Okay,
but
I'm just checking my nameplate. Okay, go ahead.
I would take some exception to this and say I don't think so. I think it's getting almost more chummy that I've been watching towards the end. Sure, a couple of people came up with, you know, either these hypotheticals to make the point that he would be sitting there and having to judge whether the president, would you get off the panel, would you stop, and all the rest. But I think he's remembering what his job is, which is to get confirmed. He's played it well. I think he's a smart guy. I've known a lot of smart guys in my life. I don't agree with him. I don't even like him. But I think he's done a good job in terms of remembering where he's going, what he wants.
I don't know if it was the Bork hearing, which was the line of demarcation, or if it was longer ago than that. But what we've seen, at least since Bork, is the tribalism that is now so common to all of our politics. I hate to agree with Lindsey Graham, but if the Democrats want their person in, they've got to win the presidency. Is there anybody in this room who would disagree with this premise that if the Democrat was the president and the nominee of the party of the president was somebody on the left who was bulletproof in that the Democrats have the vote to get him or her through, and his or her point of view was to the same on the left as Kavanaugh's is on the right, do you think the Democrats would be screaming all of the things they're screaming now? This whole process has become politicized. Again, I hope that the Democrats win all of the rest of the elections from now until 2032 at least. But if they don't, they're going to be more.
So you plan on checking out, Ira?
If I make it that long, well, I tell you how many times I think about whether Trump gets reelected and is this going to be the last president that it's going to be while I'm still alive. It's a frightening thought. But at any rate, you get the point.
I do. And it's a good point. I think that Kavanaugh's decision to not respond specifically to what would you do in the instance of a particular case, he pointed to precedent of previous interviews of other nominees.
Sides.
And so I think he, like Alan, I agree with Alan, he did make a point it's a legitimate point. Other nominees haven't done this either, so why would I be the one to say how I'm going to rule until the case is presented? That's not just politic and helps him get the job. That's a smart jurist.
But
he's
also
a smart jurist.
And of course, I agree with you entirely. But the flip side of that, of course, is that many are going to say, but we are in extraordinary times. It seems to me, right, a no-brainer that in a minute when we go over to these hearings, you're going to hear about this New York Times.
The only way that Kavanaugh will not succeed in these hearings if somehow he trips up and he uses the N-word or he says something that is just so outrageous
that guy ain't
gonna
do
it. It ain't going to happen.
It ain't going to happen.
He's not going to do that. But, you know, there is an interesting question here as to the way this is all going. The only time, Joe, you would be right about getting hot under the collar is if they accuse him of something unethical, which happened a couple of times. They said, basically, you lied to us. That's when he gets appropriately, but under control.
Right.
Yeah. No, it is control.
He can't not be angry at that if he thinks he's right.
All right. We are out of time. We're going to go over to the coverage from National Public Radio on the third day of hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. And as I said, we will be back at our normal time tomorrow at 9 a.m. unless something extraordinary happens today.
Well,
and would that happen?
In which case, we'll be here at 7:30.
We'll be back after this.